Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker. I'm here with my co-host, Stone Payton. Stone, how are you doing today?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well, man. I wish I was on commission for booking guests, because we have got a studio full.
I know, right? Right? Standing room only, literally.
Yeah.
But where's the video? I thought you were going to start getting the video feed going on, Stern show and the whole nine yards.
I want to be like Mike and Mike. You know, my wife wakes up to Mike and Mike. We could do that, right? We could have the Sheets of Integrity. We could do the whole bit. Yeah.
Yeah. How's your traveling show going?
Hey, it's a lot of fun. We have a whole new remote setup coming to the right after the show. I got to go over to Glen Lake, and they're delivering the whole new remote broadcast setup. And new news, I'm going to be emceeing. I don't know if we're going to do remote broadcast there or not, but I'll be emceeing with Monica Kaufman.
Really?
I'm showing my age. She's Monica Pearson now, isn't she?
Oh, man, Kaufman's one. That's how I know her.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're doing the whole 101 Best and Brightest to Work For thing.
Really? And so I think office on there? Is my company on there?
Hey, you got the inside
102
track,
maybe.
Yeah. I'll get you in.
Okay.
I'll get you in.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Exciting. So are you getting a bunch of new equipment and all that, or is it?
And we're going to look like a garage band, you know? You get the rollaway cases and the stuff, and we're buying a van, and we're going to wrap it with the Radio X. So, yeah, we're going to hit the road. We're going to do the... did I tell you last time about the Mud Athlon series?
Yes.
It's kind of like a triathlon.
I had a buddy of mine did it. It was called, not Muddy Buddies, but something else. It was crazy. It was like 14 miles with mud and jumping into water and crawling through stuff.
We're doing five of those all the way across the Midwest. Yeah. I say we. I'm going to produce those shows. It's going to be Dr. Fitness and the Fat Guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're going to have a fun summer, man.
That's right. Man, you're rolling. You're rolling. Well, good. Well, let's get on with today, because we have several people here that we want to chat with. Our first guest is David Shendowich, and David is the owner and president for Shendo 361 Innovation. So welcome in, David. How you doing?
Great to be here today. It's good to see you and everybody in the studio here, and I'm happy to be here.
Good. Good stuff. Could you start off giving me a little bit of background on your business and, you know, what you've done here in the past?
Okay, a little bit of background on me and my business is it goes back to when I was working with major corporations, Fortune 100 companies, where I was working in a marketing function. And what I was doing is I was helping them plan marketing strategies using an integrated marketing approach, looking at everything from a 360 point of view, so to speak, where you would look at who you are, who your customers are, why they buy your products, why they don't buy your products. And I was doing that with major brands planning and developing ongoing marketing initiatives. Well, over the years, the world has changed. Marketing has changed. How people reach other people, how people consume media has changed dramatically. People no longer watch TV and then no longer make decisions based upon seeing TV. People are basically immune to TV commercials now.
Yeah.
And what I've done is I've created a 361 approach to marketing, where I look at everybody who makes, sells, and uses a product or service. I look at a client's business. I look at how it's being marketed, and I take it to the next step. I mean, and there's one point where you do look at the 360, and then there's that one little extra step where you have to take to make it a 361 approach. And that requires really understanding who your target is, what behavior you need to influence in order to, for them to consume your product or service, and striving to understand how they consume media so you can communicate the right message at the right time in the right way.
Perfect. So you, I've heard you use the term kind of instant marketing success. What is, how do you get instant marketing success?
That's a good question. Instant marketing success is a result of what I've been seeing all over the place. I've been seeing people say that we have a 30-minute marketing solution, a one-minute marketing solution. Well, there is really no marketing solution if you don't have an instant marketing solution, which is identifying what your goals are. If you cannot identify what your goals are, what you're trying to achieve in a clear and concise way, then you'll never achieve success. And that is what I mean by instant marketing success. It's clearly identifying what your goals are. And I work with a lot of different people who have what they think are goals. But when they start analyzing their business and they start taking a look at it very critically with a focus on return on investment, they realize that the goals that they have may not be realistic. They may not be something that is really a goal. And I help them. I work very hard to help my clients find what their goals are.
Yeah. And it seems like you'd be able to do that customization with companies that are maybe larger and have, you know, organizations behind them. Does it work with a smaller company or a mid-size organization?
Good question.
Can you wear that shirt when you work with a larger organization?
only with sunglasses.
Okay.
But as far as a large company goes, is the way they typically plan, there's a process for planning for a large company, and it's usually assigned to a specific time of the year, and it's typically done several months in advance of the calendar year or the quarter or whatever they're trying to plan for. And what they do is they have a budget and they allocate resources to determining how they're going to achieve very specific goals, and then they develop the right tactics to achieve those goals. A small business, and I've been working with more and more small businesses these days, have the same challenges. They need to plan in advance. They need to have a budget, and they need to have goals. And, well, for instance, I was working with a chain of opticians mm-hmm. not too long ago, and they told me they wanted to have more business. And I said, great.
What does that mean?
Exactly. I said, well, if they had 10 locations, if I drove 50 people a day to your locations, could you handle it? And they, oh no, that'll break our business model. We couldn't handle 50 more people. So I said, how many people a day do you want to come in as new customers, new patients? And after a lot of work, we found out that they could only handle about 3 to 4 new patients per day.
Out of all their locations or per location?
Per location.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah.
So that makes it very clear and very easy to identify a goal. Let's bring in 3 to 5 new patients a day. Now, how are we going to go about doing that? And that's what we did, is we identified each of the locations. We went into the stores. We interviewed the patients, how they got there. Mm-hmm. And from there, we developed a marketing plan. And it didn't cost a lot of money because we found out that most people got there by word of mouth. They
right.
didn't have to use expensive media. They didn't have to use advertising. We were able to find a solution that was inexpensive. It worked very quickly and achieved their goal.
You bring up a really interesting point of talking to their customers. How much of that goes into the marketing game plan that you put together, dealing with existing customers and finding out, you know, how did you find this company and where are you coming from?
I like that question because that's a big part of my 361 approach is, well, for years when I worked in New York City and I worked on the 34th floor of a building and I overlooked the city of Manhattan, and we were coming up with marketing ideas that were going to affect people across the country, across the world, sitting in an office building and we were basing our intelligence on research. And after doing that for a few years, I realized that it wasn't a very smart way of doing it. And then I started going out into the field. I started talking to the salespeople. The salespeople are the most important people in any organization because their feet are on the street. They understand what's happening. You need to talk to the customers too. So a big part of my business model is with every client I have, with everybody I do marketing for, is I either work in the shoes of somebody who's a salesperson. I go into the restaurants and I work in the restaurants if I have a restaurant client. I travel with the salespeople. I was working with Nestle. And they were delivering ice cream to convenience stores around the country, and we had to figure out why they, how to improve their how they delivered ice cream. Well, the only way to do that is not by talking to them. It's by going out and loading ice cream into the ice boxes into the convenience stores.
Now, was that logistics or was that marketing? Or is that
That's marketing. Marketing is from the time a product is manufactured to the time it gets into somebody's hands. It's marketing.
Gotcha.
And you could advertise all you want, but people are not going to buy more ice cream through an ice box in a convenience store. We had to figure out a way of making this passive ice box, this freezer, into an active marketing tool, and that's what we did. And we also helped redesign the boxes that the ice cream was delivered in for each of the locations. So that's not a marketing solution per se, but it is a marketing solution because it helped sell more product through.
Yeah, it's product placement, right? I mean, I guess with that kind of stuff, product placement's key. Like where it is even on the shelf in the grocery store. You know, premier shelf is like eye level, right? And the lower you go, the lower the...
Exactly.
I never see the stuff on the top level. I never buy anything.
Well, that's obvious.
And I buy stuff that you never see down low, right?
That's right.
Now, you talk to customers as well.
Yes, it's a very important part of everything we do is to understand how the customers actually... why they're buying the products that they're buying. I mean, that is the essence. I mean, how did they find out about it? And one of the key things that we've learned over the years, and is a fact, is that most consumers, well, over 80% of all purchase decisions are made in a store. So people may go to, say, a grocery store saying, I'm going to buy this, that, and the other thing. But when they walk out of the store, the things that's in the grocery cart are pretty much all things that they decided to buy when they were in the store.
It's all impulse buying, really, when you get to that point, right?
Exactly.
And now, will customers tell you things that they won't tell, like in-house marketing? Or I think I would be more comfortable telling a third party if there was something I didn't like or something I wanted to change.
Exactly. But first of all, the one thing that marketers don't really realize is that what consumers say is usually never true. And
are they lying or they just don't know?
No, it's just human nature. What people say is not always what they believe. It's what they think that you want to hear. And that's why research is a great barometer of what you may want to know, but it's not what you should follow. I've been in so many different marketing meetings and in with businesses trying to launch new products where they did significant research. And if they believe the research, then they would never be successful. There's a lot of intelligence behind that, as well as fact-finding that you need to go out into the field and you need to learn more. And that's part of my 361 approach.
So tell me, who is your clientele? I mean, who if we ran across somebody that was, you know, looking for a marketing person, is there a niche or a group that you just really tend to work really well with?
That's good. I've worked with the largest companies as well as with the smallest local companies. And the kinds of companies I like to work with are companies that have an open mind towards change. Because if you go to, say, a major beverage company headquartered in Atlanta and you start talking to them about...
I don't know any of those in Atlanta. Are there any? I don't know. Was there a major beverage? No?
No, I'm not aware of any.
Pepsi or somebody.
Yeah, who knows.
And
if you go in there with a whole bunch of marketing ideas, they have their way set. I mean, they know what they're going to be doing. You're not going to be doing anything that's going to influence their changes, even if it's the greatest idea in the world. But if you go to a second-tier company or a company that is very competitive, they're hungry for ideas. So that is the kind of company I'm looking for, and that's the kind of company I do business with most frequently, are companies who realize that they want to change, that they want to do better, that they're competitors, and that they want to grow.
So let's shift things here for just a second. This whole social media thing. I mean, people are talking about marketing and social media and Facebook and Twitter and tweeting this and twatting that. And I mean, what's going on with this? Well, is it helpful, or what is the benefit of the social media?
Social media is a phenomenon that's evolved over the past few years. And the name media is kind of distracting because people immediately assign it to being an advertising media. But social media is a business initiative. It's more than a medium for getting your message out. Social media is how businesses is a way for businesses to run their businesses. It's a commitment from a corporation, and it is a powerful tool that's evolving. It's stealing time from TV, from every kind of media out there, and people are consuming it on a huge basis. But if you take, if you analyze it, it's a lot of it is casual talk. It's not serious talk. It's not a serious interaction between people. It tends to be very, conversational. So there's an opportunity to for brands and for marketers to have a conversation and a dialogue with their key constituencies, and that is stronger than anything that has ever existed in the media world ever before. So
a good bit of that is what you're focusing on when you're talking to these groups.
And that gets back to my 361 approach: is if social media makes sense, if a brand wants to have a conversation with its key constituencies, its prospects, its customers, then social media is the way to go. Some brands don't want to do that, and it's not right for them. I strongly believe that it's going to be becoming more and more a part of every brand's day-to-day routine to manage significant social media presence in multiple languages throughout the world and on multiple levels. So,
awesome. Very, very good stuff. So one of the other things, last question that I have for you today is kind of centered around our audience out there and looking at providing a pearl of wisdom for our listeners. You using your business experience and the things that you've been able to be successful doing and other people you've seen successful, what would your pearl of wisdom be to people out there that are working to either build their own business or be executives in the Atlanta area?
With all the clutter, with all of the communications out there, with all the tools for advertising your message, there's a lot of confusion out there. And if you have a product or a service or some kind of anything that you want to get the message out, you need to have a very clear goal. And you need to have a very precise budget. And you could easily spend all the money in the world if you don't have a goal and if you don't have a budget. And my recommendation is if anybody is trying to get a message out, even if they have $500, if they have $5, if they have $5 million, is to first have a goal and then identify who your targets are, what decisions need to be made, and then develop a very precise plan with a measurable ROI attached to everything that you do.
Perfect. Perfect. So David, if somebody wanted to get in contact with you or with 361, how would they do that? What's the easiest way to get in touch with you?
Well, the easiest way is phone and email. You can look me up. My email is david@Schendo361. That's S-C-H-E-N-D-O 361. And should I give out my phone number?
Absolutely.
Okay. And you can reach me directly.
Depends
on
if you want your phone lines just busting up. You have call centers ready for it right now?
Well, my brother sells long distance, and I'd like him to give you a call during dinner, if that's okay.
Okay, all right. No problem. I'll be happy to call him back in the middle of the night. But it's 678-571-4605. So I'll be happy to talk to you about your business and marketing challenges, and I'll be happy to do a presentation and to take a deeper look at your business. Thanks.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in. So our next guest is Laura Davis, and Laura is with Laura A. Davis and Associates, Inc. Know your emotional intelligence. I can't wait for this one because this is, you know, us guys and our emotional intelligence is probably is kind of low on that. I don't know. We'll find out, I guess,
You'll
right?
You'll find out, yes.
So tell us a little about your background.
Sure. I have been in business 16 years now, and I do executive coaching, and I train and develop leaders on emotional intelligence, and I use a tool called DISC, so I want to talk about that a little bit as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll work DISC in.
Okay, right. Perfect.
So tell us about emotional intelligence.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, in fact, I got into this because I was a marketing manager myself for many years, and I noticed that some people would be very intelligent, have a lot of smarts and a lot of education, a lot of experience, but they weren't always good leaders. And emotional intelligence is really about people being able to relate to other people and work with them effectively.
So did you coin this phrase?
No.
Is it trademarked?
I wish I had.
No.
It actually was developed and became a popular term in the 80s. and it was developed by a person at Yale, Peter Salovey. And it really became popular in the 90s. There are a lot of books about emotional intelligence now, and the primary author that people would know is a man named Daniel Goleman. He's at Rutgers. And there are four components to emotional intelligence. The first one is self-awareness, and that's a huge one. Most people are not aware of their strengths, and they don't always know their limitations. Everyone else may know their limitations around them, but they don't always know them. And then the second component is self-management and being able to manage your emotions effectively.
My count is 0-2 right now. I'm keeping score over here. I'm waiting on number 3 and 4.
We'll have a coaching session later.
That's right, that's right. Free coaching session for all attendees,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. That's good. But then you also need to have social awareness and be able to read whether you're connecting with people or not. And that's also a key component of an effective leader. And then last but not least, relationship management. And really when it comes down to it, business is about having effective relationships and effective communication.
So measuring these areas, mm-hmm. how do you do that? Is that something that's, is there a test that you take that Stone can fail outright? Or
is it? Yes. Yeah.
Fail quickly. That's in a book I read too, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Fail fast. Get it done and right. experience it.
Actually, there are a number of assessments out there on the market. And one that you can take without purchasing it is from a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0. And the authors are in San Diego. It's Travis Bradbury and Gene Greaves. So you could take that and you see how you do. And it's quite humbling.
is this DISC test associated with this?
DISC is different, yeah. And DISC is an assessment that has been around for a number of years. It's actually based on the work of William Moulton Marston. And Marston lived in the 20s. He was a contemporary of Freud and Jung. Mm-hmm. And he was quite a progressive person because he actually wrote a book called The Emotions of Normal People, whoever normal people are. You don't see too many of those around.
No, not usually.
But at any rate, he was quite progressive because he was looking at functional behavior, you know, the normal person, not dysfunctional behavior like Freud was. And, you know, his question was, why do people do what they do? And his model is based on the perception that you have as an individual of your personal power in the environment. And so the model is based on that. The D, I, S, and C are different behavioral styles or personality types.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think I may have taken one of these. And
you may have.
Yes, I think I've.
So I want to know who writes the check, because I'm envisioning the mid-level manager that probably is very technically or operationally sound, not particularly adept in the emotional intelligence arena. I don't see them coming to you and saying, you know, where you been all my life? Will you help me? So is it the senior exec? Is it the HR department? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. Well, I think more and more companies are realizing that in order to be profitable, they have to attract and retain talent, and they need to create a culture where people want to work there, because people have choices now that the recession is moving on. And
knock on microphone.
Yes, knock on microphone. But I think that's accurate. And sometimes it is a senior executive. In fact, I've had great luck with some line managers who are quite progressive, and they realize something is not quite right. They don't know exactly what, and they think that I might be able to help them, and I can. And oftentimes it is the chief learning officer or a senior level HR person or a training leader, depending on the size of the company. But yes, it does really work. The intangible can be made tangible with all these tools and assessments. And
yeah, learning, understanding what who your employee is, right? I mean, that's critical for motivating them, exactly. Maximizing their output, keeping them happy. It's not just about the paycheck, right?
I mean, exactly.
Or is that just what they say?
No, it's very true. And in fact, people are different. These different DISC styles can give you a very predictive way to understand what people's strengths are, what their challenges are, what they're going to behave like on a team. And it also can be very helpful to understand where you should put people in terms of their roles and responsibilities on a team.
Yeah.
So a lot of time I'll go in and I'll work with the executive one-on-one, and we'll do coaching. And then I'll go through the DISC assessment and share that with them. And then we'll look at the team and the composition of the team. And what often happens is people will hire people who are like them, right?
Because
I like this guy. He's cool.
He talks like I do. He thinks like I do. And that may not be the most effective way to manage. So what you want to have, obviously, is diversity so that different people bring different strengths to the table. When you have that, though, you always have the potential for more conflict. So you need to know how to work with that to collaborate and to have better communication.
Right. But this is not soft stuff. I mean, if you have a $10, $12 million enterprise resource planning upgrade engagement, and you've got an emotionally intelligent mid-level management team that will engage those people to make that transition. I mean, you're talking about millions of dollars here. This is not fluffy lunch and learn stuff here, is it?
No, I love that you said that because that's accurate. And there is a lot of research to support that, that when employees are engaged, that leads to employee satisfaction, which then leads to customer satisfaction, which leads to profit. And it's documented over and over again. So it's very important. And it is very culpable. When you see it in a company, you can really feel it, touch it. You know it when
it's a different environment.
It.
When you walk into that environment, it's like all the pistons are hitting at once.
Exactly.
They're all hitting at the right time. Everything's running together.
Yeah, and think about it. If you've ever worked for a high-performing team or for a leader that you really enjoyed working with, you know that they got the best from you, right? So it's about bringing out the best in people.
And that person, do they usually know what they're doing? Or is it a lot, some people are just good at that, right? They just do it naturally, when others really have to be trained on how to do it. Is that right? Or does everybody really need training in
yes.
this?
Yes. Well, I would say that everyone really does need training in it. You can always get better. And it is amazing, I think, how frequently we are aware of our strengths. We may not be aware of our limitations, although some people are very focused on their limitations and don't own their strengths. And often I find that. So we can all be better at self-awareness and self-management. But it is true, there are some people who are naturally more gifted in this arena than others.
Yeah.
And that is something that is nature, it's nurture, and yet it can be developed.
Okay, so let's give a freebie out, just a little one. Not a big one, you don't have to give your whole marketing.
Right.
So there are executives and business owners listening right now. And if you are talking to them about something that they can do to get more out of their employees, what would be the one thing that you'd say, look, you really have got to make sure this is happening?
Yeah. I think what would be ideal is for them to first understand themselves. And I actually call this people whispering. First, they have to understand what their strengths are and what their limitations are. And then they have to understand their impact on other people. The second step is for them to be able to read their people and to understand that not everyone, as you said before, John, are motivated by what they're motivated by. And to be able to then, third, know how to speak to that other person in their language. So if I'm someone who's a high D, I'm more direct, I'm more results-oriented, more about getting it done. You don't want to tell me lots of stories. Just get right to the point.
Right.
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 If I'm a high I person and I really appreciate the personal connection and the friendliness and the enthusiasm, don't bore me with a lot of data.
Yeah.
If I'm a high S person and I am very steady and a good listener and patient and I really like that personal connection, don't come across as rushing me. Don't be insincere. Just don't push me.
Right.
Right. And then if I'm a high C person who's very focused on quality and is a little bit perfectionist and really likes to do things accurately, don't give me a lot of fluff because I'm not going to respond well to that.
Right.
So there's a way to talk to people, to connect with them, to speak to them in their language, and then you can partner together more effectively and really collaborate. And that's the point of using DISC. It's the point of using emotional intelligence tools. So that really is what I would share with all
now,
executives.
Barring some unusual life event, is your DISC profile 10 years ago going to look a lot like it does this year, or do you find that it changes over time?
Yeah, that's a great question. The theory is that you stay the same, and yet the key is adaptability and having that flexibility and the versatility, right? So you take it as your natural self so that you get a benchmark. So you see how far you have to behave outside your comfort zone. For example, I used to do marketing research years ago, And I liked it, and I could do it, and I have the IQ to do it, but it wasn't me because that meant I was sitting looking at statistical analysis and spreadsheets all day rather than talking to people, which is what I enjoy doing, and working with people one-on-one and in groups and, you know, leading workshops and all of those sorts of things that I do now. Had I known that sooner in my career, I probably would have been a lot more successful. And I could do it, but, you know, why put a square peg in a round hole?
Right.
And that's the point of understanding some of
people
these tools.
Need to do this stuff when they're in college, when they're in high school, right?
They need
to know themselves right out of the gates.
In fact, I do sell some to professors and colleges and work with marketing people who do branding who sell this to universities
now,
as
well. Now, people score a certain way on DISC in organization XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean they need to be culled from the herd, or is there typically value in virtually any profile? It's just a matter of getting your arms around what's the best way to leverage this person's talent.
Yeah, that's a good question. So DISC is not evaluative, and that's really important. So there's no good, bad, right, wrong style. And most people are a combination of one or two styles. So you have aspects of DISC behavior regardless. And yet you have a greater intensity or preference for one or two generally. And so that's one tool. And you can work with anyone around that. The emotional intelligence comes in, there is a score for that, and you can be higher or lower. And it's quite dramatic, the difference. And often I'm called in to work with people who, quote unquote, have a little less emotional intelligence.
Trying to get that intelligence.
But that
up.
Can be improved.
The
difference
absolutely.
In the two is that's more of an opportunity for you can actually develop that skill.
Precisely.
With the benefit of someone of your
exactly,
expertise.
Exactly. So if you draw three circles, you would have IQ, you'd have EQ. And then you'd have this personality behavioral style component. So the DISC helps you with the personality behavioral style. The EQ, there's other assessments for that. And as we all know, there's IQ tests too, right? And they were developed in the 20s.
And some of us in this room probably need to put our energies toward EQ and leave the IQ thing alone.
Yes. Well, the research is quite dramatic, though, that IQ is not always an indicator of success in business. And the people who have the EQ are the ones who get ahead. And, you know, that's just common sense. If it's about relationships, business is about being able to get the best from others, then emotional intelligence is the key to doing that effectively.
What do you think? Because there's a lot of people doing this. I mean, I've heard of all these different personality tests and the Myers-Briggs and, you know, got all these different things to try and identify who are you. I'm sure a lot of people in the room have actually done that.
Mm-hmm.
What sets your coaching business apart from competitors that are out there?
Yes. Well, I think I have a broad-based background and a diverse background, which not all specialists in this arena do. I have the solid business experience for 12 years, and I worked for Exxon and Equifax and UPS, and I was a professor, and I did a number of different things. I know I did all that, you know, when I was 14, but at any rate.
You're at least 16 now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That gave me, I think, a real solid understanding of what it's like to live in an unhealthy corporate environment and also to live in a very healthy one. And I had a mentor when I was about 28, 29, who noticed that I had these skills for teaching and for coaching and so forth. So I got extra training and so forth. But in addition to that, too, I would consider myself to be just a voracious learner and reader and student of human behavior. And that has really helped me because I just love what I do. And I think that comes across when you work with people. And I get results. And I get a lot of repeat business as a result of that.
Can't really tell that you like what you do.
I was going to say, it does come across on the microphone.
You're a little kind of,
a little enthusiasm, yeah.
Yeah, you need to really get a little up. Get a little excited about your business. Because, you know, it does matter. It makes
it
difference.
It does matter. It does matter because if you're going to work, which most of us need to do, you might as well enjoy it and be happy about it. And that spills into all areas of your life. And so it's vitally important.
Now, I notice that you've got clients internationally. You have people all over the place.
Yes.
Do you see the cultures are so different in places like, you know, Asia and even certain places in Europe, certainly. And what are the biggest differences that you see in business culture here in the United States as this might work to someplace in an international area?
Yeah. Well, both EQ and DISC are validated internationally, so that's the good news. So on one level, people are people wherever you go, which is good.
It's a 70s song.
If it's not, it should be.
It should be. There you go.
Okay, so.
But that said, people have different beliefs and they have different values. And so that is important to understand and, again, be able to relate to. I did some work in Asia years ago, and what I was doing was a change management kind of training program with Marriott Corporation. They had just bought the Renaissance Hotel Group. And it was interesting, you know, you can read about different beliefs cross-culturally, and part of that was, of course, people like to work more in teams, and they are not used to being called on one-on-one. And I read that, and I thought, yeah, okay, I'll incorporate that into my training. But when I was actually working with people, I realized, you know, this is for real. If I would ask, like in America, you would just ask a question and somebody will answer in a group, right? They will not do that. So I had to adjust my style and adapt and make sure that they did team work, and then somebody would report out or call on people, because that's part of the British training that they've had to if they speak English. But then, you know, I couldn't even read the flip charts. They're all in kanji characters, so somebody had to translate. So it was just a different dynamic.
Yeah.
But just more broadly, I work with Australians. I work with people from Europe, from South America. And I think it's just helpful to realize that, again, we tend to be a bit chauvinistic or, you know, Americentric. Mm-hmm. They think that our ways are odd, too.
Yeah.
And so to understand where someone else is coming from and be able to speak to them in their language is the premise of EQ, of DISC, of great coaching, of great leadership.
And not necessarily in their the verbal language,
correct,
right?
Yes.
In terms of how they really are going to understand what you're saying. And
yes,
what
good
they,
clarification. You know. Right. In terms of what's important to them, what motivates them, mm-hmm. what their values and beliefs are, but their style,
yeah.
you know, and some people are more talkative, some people are more fact-based, task-based. So to speak to them in that way makes them feel comfortable, and then they can feel comfortable with you. So it builds trust.
Great.
Yeah.
Great stuff. So as we wrap up, I'm going to put you on the spot for our pearl of wisdom. So for our listeners, what would your pearl of wisdom be?
Well, there are several. I think the first one is to take personal responsibility for your communication, and that's a huge one. And so one of the first things I talk about in coaching sessions and in training groups is, yeah, it may seem like it's that other person. However,
we had this discussion at the house. I can just tell you.
This discussion
is very familiar.
Well, yeah, the only thing that you have control over is your own behavior, but more importantly, your thoughts and beliefs about the other person. And people can feel that energetically. So to take responsibility and to make sure that you are trying to communicate, you have the intent to really connect with someone from the heart. I think that's a huge thing. And then the other thing is just to use these tools and to practice them and to become a better communicator and therefore a better leader.
It does take practice.
It takes practice.
It really does. I mean, to even remember what you're doing and just not go on autopilot, which will take you back to what you were doing before.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, in fact, is what we do biologically. You go into that flight or fight mode and go back into your reptilian brain, they call it. So you want to be more conscious. Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming. That was great.
My
great
pleasure.
Stuff.
Thank you so much.
Very interesting. So our next guest is Melissa Craig. And Melissa is the field sales coordinator for Sports Clips, an expanding franchise here in the area.
Marketing coordinator.
I was close. All right. So I had it written down here. I have to blame somebody else because I can't.
No,
blame
you can't. They're your last guest. You're going to take personal accountability.
I will.
For your own communication.
My name is John Baker, and I just made
now,
a mistake.
Are we going to have? Because you've got your whole entourage here. Is Jessica going to join us on this interview as well?
Absolutely. She's our product specialist.
Well, we mentioned at the top of the show we have a few folks in the studio, so we're doing a little musical chairs. But I got to give you the backstory.
Do it.
on how Melissa got here. So, you know, Lee Cantor, the other partner in this business, he and I have these grand designs on dominating the world with internet radio.
Yes.
One piece of that strategy is we want to spin off a franchise show. So we went to the franchise show that was here in town a few weeks ago, and we met up with these folks with Sport Clips, who are just going great guns, incredibly successful concept. And we got to visiting with these folks, and that's where we met Melissa. And I got on my hands and knees and said, you got to come on the show, because I already knew about this outfit. There is a Sport Clips. You could throw a rock from my front stoop to the Sport Clips.
Yeah.
And they treat, I don't care if you're short and fat, they treat you like you're Mel Gibson when you walk in. You got these flat screen televisions with the sports going, and you got the pretty ladies, and they're all nice to you. And I'll let her tell you more, but they wash your hair with a stuff that really smells good, and you just you come out of there. You're
like
on cloud
it's like night. A man spa.
It is, and it's almost like you got theme music following you out into the car. You feel like
the
a
Rocky.
Million bucks.
You feel like there's Rocky playing in the background.
So that's how we got here. Right. Haven't met Jessica before, but I've met Melissa, and I'm really looking forward to this interview. Okay, I'll let you do your job now.
Well, no, that's great.
Yeah.
So Melissa, tell us about Sports Clips and what it's all about.
Absolutely. And I do have to correct you. It is a manly man spa.
Oh, I'm sorry. Manly man spa.
Basically, to sum up Sport Clips, we're a sport-themed environment. We specialize in men and boys haircuts. We have sports on TV, as Stone said. You actually have individual televisions at each station. We're open 7 days a week. And we offer a variety of unique and special services also.
Really?
Yes.
Now, can you drink beer while you're getting your haircut?
No, we can't drink beer yet.
That's next.
Maybe the next concept.
Yeah, I've actually had that comment from several guys.
Shots?
That would be fun.
Yeah,
Jess.
Right.
So it's all about what guys like, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
All right. So tell me some about the obviously the haircut and the nice wash that Stone was talking about, your nice massage with the hair.
Tell them about the MVP.
Absolutely.
They got to know about the MVP.
Absolutely. Right, that's actually our MVP is our most popular service, and it includes our varsity haircut shampoo. It includes a neck and shoulder massage and also a steam towel treatment, almost like the barbershop feel.
All right.
And that's our most popular service. But we also offer our varsity haircut and then also our triple play that includes that signature varsity haircut shampoo and then also steam towel as well.
What, now, are you shaving too? Do you do the straight razor shave?
No, we don't do the shave.
Skills for that? That's
we don't
a little dangerous sometimes. Someone comes at me with that razor, I'm like, dude, have you done this before?
But you do get the, you know how in the old Western movies you see the cigar poking out of the hot towel?
Yeah.
Well, they don't have the cigar, but they have the hot towel, and it feels,
exactly.
It really
but
feels
if you had
good.
A beer, it would be even.
He's really pushing hard on the beer thing.
You gotta have an
we'll work on that for you.
We got to talk to our local politicians and see if we can't get something going on the beer thing. But I think they're just brilliant in their concept, their messaging, and they're living it out. You know, it's not just the aesthetics of the personnel that they bring on. Somebody in that organization, Laura, has got way high EQ because they're bringing on the right kind of people. They treat you like gold. But just little things like they call you know, like the varsity. Well, I never made varsity ball in high school. I made JV because I had a car. And the two athletes we had on the team couldn't drive to practice. You know, but you feel like a winner when you walk in
at
there.
At Sport Clips, you're always varsity, Stone.
See there
you go. There you go. He is looking for some comp haircuts.
Am I working it, man?
You are working it, man. I'll tell you what. That's good stuff. So what else is unique about the experience there?
Definitely our client experience, you know, but mostly our services is what really sets us apart from our competition. You know, we've got 17 locations in and around Atlanta. Closest one to the station is actually located in Alpharetta off of Windward Parkway.
Okay.
Right in front of Home Depot. But we also have locations in Roswell, Dunwoody, two in Marietta right off Johnson's Ferry, Woodstock, and then all the way up south to McDonough and Noonan and then up north to Canton, so we've got a lot of different locations to service all of our clients.
And this is a franchise?
It is.
You can get into a franchise with
absolutely.
This? Can someone answer questions about that? A little bit?
Okay. I'm looking at Paul right now.
Paul,
he would be
answer?
The best
could
to answer.
Could you hop in on her microphone real quick?
Or put her on Peter's microphone. We'll get all Peter back up.
Let me, because I've got some, I know a lot of individuals.
John's got pockets, man. We may have sold a franchise here this morning, man.
Paul is definitely it's
not
a
me,
franchise
but
expert
a lot of people that I know.
The
franchising seems to be a huge pop nowadays. A lot of people are looking at doing it. People going through executive transition, looking to having their own thing. What are the benefits of a franchise with Sports Clips?
Well, it is a great organization. It's headquartered in Georgetown, Texas. They gave us fantastic support from day one with people to train, not only the team leaders, that's what the owners are called, team leaders, of course. They train us, and they stay with us through the whole process. I mean, I've been doing this for about a year now, and we have four stores, and I still talk to the area developer 2 to 3 times a week about marketing ideas, recruiting ideas, training ideas. So we're they're constantly involved, and that's great. That's one of the reasons you buy a franchise.
Yeah, you have the blueprint there, and you just kind of have to go out and make it happen, right?
That's right.
So a lot of the fears about the franchising is sometimes they clamp down on your creativity, or you know, maybe they say they have the support, but they really don't. Have you found that to be an issue?
Not on the support part. We've gotten a ton of support. The creativity, I got to tell you, that's one of the reasons you buy a franchise. So if you want to buy a Sport Clips and you want to put flowers in the wall, it's probably not the thing for you.
Yeah.
We believe...
Big posters of cars and
right.
other stuff.
Do your research and make sure it's a franchise that you're interested in, that you believe in. And we did. My partners and I did believe in that concept. And we want control. We want you to be able to walk into a Sport Clips in Noonan, walk into a Sport Clips in Canton, and it's the same experience, and it's the same feel. It's really important for all of us.
And what brings people back? What do you guys think brings people back? That's a general question, anybody.
Yeah, definitely the client experience and just building the relationships with your clients. You know, we put notes and we try to specialize in, you know, getting to know them. And, you know, if I cut your hair once, you go to a different stylist. You know, we put notes in the computer and let them know that, you know, how I did it, so you get the same experience.
It's definitely a relationship. I mean, I don't know, Stone, do you get the same person on a regular basis all
the
time?
Well, no, it's not the same person, but I go to the same shop, and I think you could probably go to any shop, and it's in the computer, but they call me up, and they say, I understand last time you did the number 7 clipper thingy or whatever, and I'm a pretty easy client, because I say, well, you know, if we screw it up, I got a nice hat, but... But no, to her point, they have the notes of exactly what happened last time around, and so it's a consistency thing.
Yeah,
you know if you go there, you're going to be treated well. You're going to get a good haircut. You know what you're going to pay. The only variable might be you might tip a little higher or something if it's payday and you're feeling really especially cool. Or you might buy some of that really good smelling shampoo that they have.
You're into the shampoo thing, aren't you?
You know, he loves
it. We're going to get you a coupon. I'm going to let you have a coupon.
Tea Tree Shampoo.
What's it called?
Tea Tree. It rhymes.
Paul Mitchell Tea Tree Shampoo.
All right.
And actually, Jessica can talk a little bit more about some of our products also.
Yeah.
If you want to just kind of add a blip.
Yeah. At Sport Clips, we use our Paul Mitchell signature products. What he's talking about is the Tea Tree Shampoo, and literally your head feels tingly after you
really?
Use it.
Really?
It's different than anything
else. It's
like
eucalyptus to your hair.
Well, and you're in like a massage chair when they wash your hair.
Yeah.
Just the little things. This is going to sound silly, but just the little things. When the lady was washing my hair, she took one finger and like closed my ear so there didn't get water in it.
Yeah, I hate that water in the ear. God, I hate
You know, Uncle Jerry never did that out in the number 2 tub in the backyard. He just dunked you, and then put the bowl over your head and cut it across. Yeah. It's a very different experience. But I'm curious to know, Jessica, what drew you to the organization? Because surely you probably worked in this industry before. What is it about Sport Clips that attracted you to go work for them as opposed to somewhere else?
Yeah, I'm from Michigan. And the good thing about working for Sport Clips is it's a franchise, and they're located nationwide. So I moved down to Georgia almost 2 years ago, and so I was able to switch from a Sport Clips in Michigan to Georgia. So that was, that's a really nice thing. And basically just working with men's hair, and it's kind of a faster-paced environment than working, in a salon with women's hair. And
So are we easier to work with? Are we a little more laid back?
Yeah, I know. It's a lot of fun, and we get to work.
Not a lot of dye going on. A lot of hair color.
Yeah, no perms.
Nothing like that.
Although we did talk about dye on my last trip. Just very short, very briefly.
Very quickly.
We made a quick
crack.
Well, there was this kid that walked in with this gorgeous head of hair, and I said, I want that. I want that cut right there.
Yeah,
so she couldn't make that happen, but it did. My head was tingling.
Tingling is a good thing. That's good. Excellent. So, what if somebody's wanting to schedule? Do they have to schedule, or is this a walk-in kind of thing?
Nope. No appointments necessary.
Really?
Open 7 days a week.
Good stuff.
And don't you guys have a sign at mine? I think there's actually a sign that says no waiting or something like that. I thought.
That's a cool thing. We have this big no waiting sign, and that kind of lets our customers know if they're driving by, and oh, look, no waiting. I can just get in right now.
So. Now, is that true? Or
we don't put that out.
We don't lie about it.
And then the 15 minutes you're going, well, we meant long waiting. It was defining that as being waiting. Yeah. So,
But, so, you know, people that have real jobs, they try to get there on a lunch hour or right after work. It's just not that big a deal for me. I just go during the middle of the day right,
I do have
right
one
after
of those.
My nap.
Yeah,
you know?
Those jobs. Are,
so, but yeah, it's be particular. You got to try that. We'll get you a
You need one in Perimeter.
Discount.
You have one in Perimeter?
You could buy one.
We have one very close to Perimeter. Actually, Jessica is the manager of our Dunwoody store. It's located
off
Dunwoody. At
Dunwoody
Club Drive.
Yeah, it's about 5-10 minutes away from
all
the
right,
Perimeter.
Okay.
Club Drive.
So we've already got it covered.
Now, will you cut my hair?
I will.
All right. Yeah. Next time I come in, I'll go. Jessica told me she will give me the perm. I want it from Jessica. No one else. These locks need
well, that's an
proper
important
treatment.
Point. You can't make appointments, but you can absolutely request whoever you'd like. So if you find that Jessica cuts your hair the way you like, come in, request Jessica every time, and we'll make sure you get her.
And you know what else it is when you're getting your haircut? The haircut's obviously the main thing, right? But you also kind of develop a relationship sometimes with these stylists, and it's like, oh, you know, they're about their family and then this and that, and it's kind of like, you know, sitting down with a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what we try to do.
All right, boys, too. I got like three boys, so I may have to just put you guys into the profit margin all by myself. All right. So, you know what? Every guest who comes on the show has to give us their pearl of wisdom. I will give any three of you guys the option to tell me the pearl of wisdom that you give to listeners that might help them from a business perspective or just in life in general.
Or a grooming perspective.
I will piggyback off of what Laura said is just kind of do what you love and love what you do.
And are you doing that?
I am.
All right. Well, perfect. Perfect. Thanks, guys. So these are Melissa Craig from Sport Clips and Franchise Opportunities, great haircuts, and nice-smelling shampoo.
And we've got some coupons here at the station, and we're going to be giving those out over the next few weeks. And let's make sure they know where some locations are around here so they can go check you guys out.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've got Roswell off of Woodstock Road, Alpharetta, Windward Parkway. We've got two locations in Marietta right off of Johnson's Ferry, Peachtree Parkway, located in Suwannee, Duluth, McDonough, Noonan, Canton,
wow.
Ackworth, Hiram.
Yeah, you can find locations. You're out in Hiram? Oh, my goodness.
Yes, sir. Actually, I was there yesterday.
Wow.
And do you guys have a website?
We do.
We do, sportclips.com. You can find your nearest location online at sportclips.com.
Terrific. All right.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. We appreciate that. So our next guest is, actually, we have two people.
We're going to have a whole, team switch out here.
We got a team switch out.
We got the whole entourage from, it's Premier Exhibitions, right? And so these guys do the Bodies exhibition and the Dialogue in the Dark, and they're brought to us by the same PR pro that has brought so many other wonderful guests through the Business Radio X system, Marcia Middleton with M Squared. So we're delighted to have
her. How are you? Good to see you.
So I don't know if we're going to mic Marcia up or not, or she's just gonna hang back. And
Marcia only organizes these things. She's like, I'm not going on there. You crazy. I'm not doing that.
But this crowd has been very patient and listening to the rest of our show because we had an unusually large crowd today, but they're the ones that are going to bring it home for us, man.
Well, because we don't have video, I got to tell you what's happening
right now. Yeah, talk this through.
Teresa is opening what looks to be a highly secured briefcase, large briefcase, and she's pulling out like body parts. So yeah, it looks like we got a brain here, I think, and it looks to be, I think she said earlier, a lung, a couple of lungs,
yes,
and a heart.
We do,
and we got a heart. Okay, so you got to make sure you talk right into there.
So we want to get the story on these. So, yeah, this is really, I don't know that we've ever had quite this level of show and tell in the studio before.
All right, so I've got Peter and Teresa, and these guys are with Premier Exhibitions. And tell us, this is obviously from from one of the exhibits that you have, right?
Yes, these are from Bodies, the exhibition.
Bodies, and I went to this with my kids couple of years ago,
really?
And it was fascinating. Have you ever been?
I've not been, and I've got to get down.
It is crazy. I'll let you guys tell about it, but it was.
Yeah, why are they here?
Don't know. I could.
Well, I did have a thing or two to say about Sport Clips, so I guess you could say something.
That's true. So tell us about Bodies and tell us about Dialogue in the Dark, which is your two main things, right?
Well, Bodies, the exhibition, and Dialogue in the Dark are two exhibitions that are currently open in Atlantic Station here in Atlanta. And they are two incredible exhibitions that offer visitors a chance to experience their bodies and have a better understanding of their social understanding after they experience Dialogue in the Dark. So Bodies offers an intimate and informative view into the human body like never before. We use real human specimens that have been dissected and preserved to show you the inner workings of your human body, which was once reserved only for medical students in the medical community.
And you guys are in different cities and really all over the place. Do you guys organize that across the country?
We do. We do premier exhibitions, which tours Bodies the Exhibition and Dialogue in the Dark is based here in Atlanta.
In Atlanta. Now, there's got to be multiple because there's a lot of dead bodies out there. So I'm sure you're not, you know, hurting for specimens, right?
Yeah. I wonder, where is he headed with this?
Well, they're you've never been to this thing, right? So it's crazy. They've got lots of different exhibits. But you guys have been in Atlanta before, and now I guess you're back. Mm-hmm. How long do you stay in Atlanta?
Well, we have been in Atlanta since 2008, and we are slated to stay here until the end of August.
Okay.
And Atlanta is what we like to call a semi-permanent exhibition.
Oh, cool.
We have two permanent exhibitions, one in New York City at the South Street Seaport, and one in Las Vegas at the Luxor Hotel and Casino. And then the rest of our exhibitions are kind of traveling around the world. And typically, they're in a city for about 4 to 6 months.
Okay, I want to hear about these things you got on the table.
He can't even stop. I was trying to go a little further, but he can't help himself.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Because that looks like a brain.
Yes, it is a real human brain that has been preserved through a revolutionary process called polymer preservation. So this specimen has been dissected, so you can kind of see what is going on inside of the brain as well as outside. And these four specimens are just a small sample of the over 250 specimens that are in the Atlanta exhibition.
And now, is that about how big a brain is? This is like what, a little bigger than a grapefruit, maybe?
This is a very average size brain. The brain is actually the most difficult organ in the body to preserve because it's mostly made of like waters and fats. So it can shrink a little bit during the preservation process, but this is a very true-to-form size.
Imagine if the Egyptians had this technology. They would just have...
Wow, yeah.
You know, all that mummy thing, they'd just be like, no, just throw them into the exhibition and you'd be good. You know, you're set. You're never going to, you know, you'll
be
forever.
A lot of wrinkles on that. I mean, you think it was high EQ on that one?
Laura can probably tell us.
So what disc person, where would they fall into the disc category?
Let Laura analyze that. Would
the brain, then we got the lungs. We got a doctor in here someplace. Right?
Yeah, we have two lungs here, a healthy lung and a diseased lung. You can see just visibly like the huge difference between these two. You can see the cancer polyps that are all over this lung. So this obviously belonged to a lifetime smoker.
So that's a product of a smoker right
there. This would have been the product of a smoker. And in the exhibition, we have a healthy lung featured next to a smoker's lung, and it just really provides visitors an opportunity to see what their everyday health choices that they're making, how it affects their bodies. And school kids, you get them through, and you can tell them all the time that you shouldn't smoke, smoking is bad for you. But until you see this up close, in person, it really hits home. And that's one of the purposes of the exhibition. I mean, we really believe that your body is the most... Your most important possession. It's the only thing that you carry with you from the time you are born until you take your very last breath. And amazingly, people know very little about their human body. And going through the exhibition, it gives you an opportunity to actually learn about what's going on. Your doctor can tell you, but you can see up close and personal what is inside you. And it gives you an opportunity to make better health choices on a daily basis.
How could you keep smoking if you walk by that exhibition?
Exactly.
I mean, you got to take every teenager by the time, before they go smoke a cigarette behind the barn, you got to get them down here to see this,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And personal experience? it sounded like you knew what you're talking about there.
Just, you know, going
just
off.
Just saying.
And in the exhibition, next to these lungs, we actually have a case where people drop their cigarettes after they see this. And it's
nice.
Incredible. By the end of a run, we'll have to empty the case out a couple of times.
Do you resell them?
Wow.
That would defeat the purpose, but no.
I thought that'd be a good business model.
You don't have anything that sort of dissuades people from eating bacon, do you? Because I really enjoy my bacon.
Well, we do have like a healthy aorta featured next to an aorta that has been filled with plaque, and here I have a heart.
Right.
And you can see the arteries that are and the veins that are in the heart and how small they really are. So if you can imagine, it wouldn't take that much plaque and build up to block one of these arteries.
And, and it's game over if you plug those up too badly, right?
Yes, you can hold. In the exhibition, you can't touch the specimens, but we do have a touch booth at the end with some specimens like these that you are actually able to handle and touch.
People must go berserk when they go. Kids must just have a ball. Do you have field trips and that kind of stuff?
We do. It's an incredible field trip opportunity for educators.
Yeah.
We have teacher's guides and lesson plans that teachers can print off before they go to the exhibition and really bring the exhibition into their classroom both before and after their field trip.
And, you know, one of the things that they've got all these different sections that you can go through, and you can look at the brain or you can look at the arteries, all the veins. It was wild to see a body that was basically a head and then all of the veins and the arteries. And that was the only thing that was there. Mm-hmm. And you see all of the different intricacies that kind of go through the body down to the legs and the arms. And you can really see the outline of the body, but it's just not there anymore. Mm-hmm. How in the world do they strip out? How do they do that?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite specimens in the exhibition. They use corrosion casting and the veins and the arteries, and then they kind of strip away the rest of the body, the muscles and the bones, and what is left is kind of like a corrosion casting almost of the veins in the body. And it's incredible to see because it really is an outline of a human body. And so then it makes you think, you know, when you get a paper cut, of course you bleed because how many veins there are throughout mm-hmm. your entire body. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's a really cool exhibit. What about Dialogue in the Dark? I've tried to go to that, and boy, it's sold out all the time.
Dialogue in the Dark is an incredible exhibition that is featured next to Bodies, the exhibition in Atlantic Station. It's a little bit different because Bodies, you can kind of walk up and just get a ticket and go through, but Dialogue in the Dark is done through time ticketing. And we have Peter with us here, who is one of the guides for Dialogue in the Dark, and he will be able to walk you through this incredible experience that only offered right now in the United States and Atlanta.
Wow. Yeah, so tell us about it, Peter. How's this thing work, man?
Well, it opened 2.5 years ago, and I was fortunate enough to be one of the original guides hired. I am visually impaired, and I think there's about 23 or 24 of us who work there, either visually impaired or totally blind guides. For me, just a little bit of a background. At that point, a year prior to that, had almost perfectly normal 20/20 vision.
Wow.
And I got an eye disease called central retinal vein occlusion in the summer of 2007, and in 3 months I was considered quote-unquote legally blind.
Wow.
But visually impaired is the way to describe me, because when people hear blind, they think of total darkness.
Yeah.
I can see, just everything's real blurry. But I had
that happens to me some evenings.
All of us.
I can empathize.
That's self-induced. It doesn't count.
But I had a year of rehab through the Blind and Low Vision Services of North Georgia. And then when that rehab was completed, this was the first Dialogue that came to the United States, as Teresa mentioned, and I applied for it, was hired. Perfect timing, I always say, because I was ready for that next step. And I was hired at that time, and I've been there since that 2.5 year opening. So basically the tour itself, as Teresa mentioned, is us taking people through a completely different world. It's such a visual world we live in, and we rely so much on our sight. You know, when the lights go off and I'm introduced to my guest, which is in complete darkness, you know, obviously they're quite nervous at that time, but our job as a guide is to assure them that, you know, there's no 20-foot drop or, you know, coming
there's
up.
There's no car. Hey, you didn't know that car was coming, did you?
That's right.
Don't bother. They break legs all the time on this thing. You'll be fine.
We have no problem scaring them, so we try to reverse that process. So turn it the other way. But it's a matter, in Theanpro, they talk about the cane being their best friend, but we tend to tell them, that's your second best friend. Your best friend is truly our voice, and they have to trust in us to listen to our directions and to follow our voice through the exhibition. And by the time we are completed with that 1 hour tour, there's a certain bonding going on there. They've gotten to know us in a very different way, non-visual, and we've gotten to know them likewise in return. And there's even a bonding that goes on between the participants in the group we may have. They get to laugh at each other's mishaps and whatever things they're thinking, they're touching or identifying. And speaking of touching. First time I've been so close to these organs here.
That's right. The brains and the lungs and the heart.
Say a little bit about that experience. So if we were walking through right now, we wouldn't be able to see anything at all.
No.
We're listening to your voice, and you're allowing us or encouraging us to feel some things that, and we're trying to figure out what they are, kind of thing?
Right. Encouraging to explore it. It takes a while to loosen up, I think, most people to that extent. But eventually, you know, a quarter of the way through, they're starting to, as the some of the other bolder participants in our group are beginning to explore and say, hey, I found this or that. Then they say, oh, you know, I'm going to see what I find. And or smell, you know, or hear. And we encourage them to be in tune with the other senses, which sometimes are neglected again because of our heavy reliance on sight.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a great time. So those are two wonderful exhibits here in Atlantic Station, right?
Yes.
Down there in 17th Street, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Right there in Atlantic Station, you can grab dinner. You can go to one or both of these things, and a great experience for premier exhibitions. And Teresa, Peter, thank you guys for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank
for
you.
Having
so
our
pleasure. I gotta hit you with the pearl of wisdom. So either one or both can give your pearl of wisdom.
I would say our pearl of wisdom for Bodies the Exhibition is that everybody should take control of their own health and wellness, and the best way to do that is through education. And people say what you don't know can't hurt you, but we believe differently. What you don't know can absolutely hurt you. So come on down to Bodies the Exhibition and learn a little bit more about yourself, and your body will thank you.
Great. Anything?
And for me, there's total darkness is something that can't be explained. It has to be experienced. So you think you know what total darkness is, but you don't until you've been in it. And sometimes people in my group, I'll ask them, have you been in total darkness? And they say, yes. Where has that been? Most of the time, it's a cave. And then I'll say, have you had a cane in your hand and told to come to my voice? So that begins the journey from there. So it's a lot of fun and something you can't explain, you have to experience. And it is a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Great.
So come see us.
All right. Well, that's great stuff. We appreciate all our guests today and your patience for this packed house. Four great stories, and we really do appreciate you guys making this this day special. So until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.